Hi, I'm Kylie.
And I'm Elliot.
We're hosts of Bad Dad, Rad Dad, a Snack Labs podcast where we look for better dads one movie at a time. Every week, we talk about the movies we watched, the thoughts and feelings they brought up in us, and the best and worst dads we found in them.
Our weekly movie picks can span decades, genres, languages, and more. Plus, we keep it totally spoiler-free so you can discover movies that you want to watch.
So join us every Thursday on our silly little movie journey to hear about the movies we watched that week.
And the dads they made us wish we had. Because
my dad's dead.
And my dad's a deadbeat.
But as far as we're concerned,
not all dads have to be bad.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, my loves. It's Bridie, and we are delivering our weekly episode to you today, featuring our guests Morgan Catalina and Oscar Peters. We connected with Morgan about her festival Come Alive, which was an erotic art festival that took place in Utrecht over the summer of 2022. And Oscar was one of the participating artists. I think you're going to find this conversation really fun and really, quite thought-provoking, actually. And at the very end, we have a little musical surprise. So stay tuned in right until the end. Oh, you want to do it right now?
I thought we were doing it now.
Okay, let's do it now.
I don't know it.
You don't know it?
I think it's, is it, do you wish, do I wish I had
I
a,
wish I had an Oscar Mayer wiener. That is what I truly like to be.
Oh, you want
to
be, they want to be an Oscar Mayer wiener?
As if I were an Oscar Mayer wiener. Everyone would be in love with me.
Everyone does love Oscar's wiener.
Okay, so that was your little treat for the beginning of the episode.
Enjoy the episode, folks. This one's really, really fun. And big shout out to
our guests, Morgan and Oscar.
What is it called again?
Come Alive.
Big shout out to Come Alive. Well, I'm excited for this conversation because, I mean, look, I came in today
blind,
so blind. But Bride, you gave me a little rundown on the conversation that we're having today. We're going to be speaking to Morgan and Oscar from Come Alive, all the way over in Amsterdam. I'm on your guys' website, and the first thing that just like jumps out to me is this amazing image of a very, very cute bottom with some googly eyes. It's Halloween, like right now, and I'm going to like a rave tonight, and I don't have a costume, but I'm looking at this cute ass in a thong and these googly eyes, and I'm thinking, This might be the way to go.
Yeah, totally.
Morgan, Oscar, what is Come Alive? Give us a little bit of a breakdown on what it is that you guys have created.
Sure. So my name's Morgan. I'm the curator, co-curator of Come Alive, and it was an art exhibition that really looked at a plurality of voices exploring eroticism and what that actually means for people and how eroticism can actually be a healing force, both on a personal level, but also on a more societal level. And it took place this summer in Utrecht. It was on for about 2 months, and the show has just closed, sadly. And then Oscar was one of the artists who were featured in the show.
Cool. Sweet. And over 2 months, are we talking, give me a bit of like a sort of paint a picture for me of what it is I'd be walking into if I bypass. Yeah. I'm walking through Amsterdam. I don't know much. I see this like science is, you
it's
know,
in Utrecht
or Utrecht. Is that not, I don't know.
I had to look it up.
I don't know the world.
Different city.
Okay. So I was in Amsterdam and then somehow I fucking blacked out and I woke up in Utrecht. And I see a sign that says Come Alive Festival. And I'm like, that sounds interesting. And I walk in, what am I stumbling into?
So we actually hosted this 2 month art exhibition at Het Nieuwe Muntgebouw, which is the old mint. So it's a printing press where they made the coins of Europe. And so It's a neoclassical building, very traditional, on the canals, very iconic, cute, like windmills kind of vibe in Utrecht. And when you open up the door to walk inside, the very first thing you saw was this kind of moving, breathing, brightly colored art installation from Metastera that immediately like flipped its on its head. And so what we wanted to do with the show was take this this symbol of this treasury building, which is looking at kind of centralized currency and centralized power, and flip that on its head. And so we wanted to make it more like soft and fluid, where everything was moving and we had scent, we had sounds. It was really stimulating. So the first room that you would walk in was really designed to stimulate all of the senses. And we had 45 artists with different installations. So there was quite a mix of things happening in the show, about 5,000 square meters. So it was really quite a large exhibition. And then we had workshops and parties and events throughout the whole period. So there was always something new, and that was great. So like you might walk in there one day and there's a couple wearing full latex cat suits, or you might walk in and then someone is trying to, you know, steal Oscar's art installation that actually happened. And we hosted a voguing ball. So there was just constantly like full of life in the space. So it was kind of like every time you stepped into the exhibition, something new was possible.
Amazing. I mean, that sounds, really, it sounds like a lot. It sounds stressful as someone running something like that. That sounds like so much work. Like how often, you know, throughout the span of a week, how often are these, is the exhibition sort of shifting and changing with different events?
We hosted a couple of key anchor events, like a big opening and a big happy ending closing and the voguing ball. But we did generally a couple events every single week. It was open 5 days a week. So yeah, it was a bit of a logistical nightmare, but it was also really fun because, you know, one of the things we really wanted to do is invite people from the community to use this as a space for themselves as well. Because during COVID, of course, we all kind of isolated into our pods and forgot how to talk to each other. So we really wanted the exhibition to be a place where people could come together and make new friends, but also bring their own. And for us, you know, the art is just a vehicle to spark a conversation. So we really wanted to create a space that could serve as an entry point for people to have conversations around sex or around healthcare, around eroticism. And so that was a big part of the reason why we hosted these different workshops and events throughout the period.
Was this something that you were planning prior to COVID and then had to think, or was this a response to that?
Well, personally, I lost all my work as an event producer during COVID. Mm-hmm. And so I actually went back to school to study holistic sexuality education. Cool. And so then that was really like a deepening of my research, and hosted a lot of online talks. And that was really great, but it really left me wanting to connect with people in real life. So, Yeah, as COVID was kind of wrapping up here, we kind of recognized that people are really hungry for conversations around intimacy and connection, and that those are best served physically together. So it wasn't a necessarily direct response to COVID, because it's something we were thinking about for quite a long time since 2017 when we first interacted. But the timing was perfect, because I think it allowed people a safe space to kind of open up and be comfortably uncomfortable.
Well, one of the things I really love about the a little blurb on the website, it says, together we find a way of out of the hyper commercialization of romantic love and sexuality, creating alternatives to the increasing loneliness people are experiencing. That piece about like trying to escape the hyper commercialization of sexuality. How did you go about doing that? Like, what are the things that you saw in the way that, you know, society, capitalist society sort of views sex, utilizes sex, as like a way to sell, as a way to sort of gawk, as a way to like, I guess, like continuously add on to the taboos that surround sex in general. Like, what were the ways that you were doing to kind of find those alternatives that you were speaking to in terms of like increasing in terms of addressing that increasing loneliness?
Yeah, I think one of the things, especially the pandemic, helped us all to see is that we can't really rely on these institutions of the past, right? And so these kind of gatekeepers are no longer providing for our needs in the way that maybe they used to. And so we can do this ourselves. And that can actually be very simple. We don't need to buy things. We don't need to buy into this kind of sexuality or connection as a commodity to enjoy the benefits of it. So that could be actually just sitting and having a conversation with somebody, but it could also be, for example, we had like a touch workshop. So we had one called "The Mouth is a Microcosmic Pleasure Portal." It was really boring, like your own senses, you know, and finding pleasure that is unique to yourself. And, you know, we didn't want to be prescriptive about what these things are or how you should value them, but just kind of give people a lot of opportunities to try things that were new. And maybe sometimes that didn't lead to a connection, but then maybe sometimes people did find something that they liked. But it's really about like sharing love with each other and providing for each other outside of these larger systems. And I think when you look at a lot of like successful political revolutions, you see that like people are feeding each other and taking care of each other and supporting each other directly. And that's kind of what we wanted to remind everyone of, is that you don't need to buy something. We can just support each other directly. Mm. That's a long answer. I don't know if that really...
I love it.
No, it's great. It's great. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Turn Me On Podcast. We'll be back after this short break.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah. I think it really highlights a really common theme that I've been hearing since the pandemic, which is just like, exactly to parrot what you just said. It's just like, we can't wait around for larger, like, organized bodies to step in and help us fix these problems of disconnection in our communities. Like, we, like, nobody's going to come down from the top down and tell us how to make our small communities, like, really strong and resilient and, like, just, you know, living in the city, just having community alone with your neighbors is like, it doesn't exist unless you go out and you make it happen. Nobody else is out there organizing that for you. I'm really curious about the process of recruiting artists or inviting artists, or did artists apply? Like, how did you get this crew together? And at what stage were you like, this is the theme? Do you have something that you want to contribute? Like, what was that creation process like?
In a way, this was kind of the thesis of my research for this school program that I did. And I collaborated with Ina Havers as co-curator. And so we each kind of, it was really funny, actually, when we first talked about the show, one day on Zoom, we were like, well, I've been collecting some artist ideas. And she was like, well, me too. And we each shared each other like our own PowerPoints, and there was so much overlap. And they're like, okay, we really have to do this. Mm-hmm. They're really on the same track. And from there, we really did a lot of research. So we read a ton, and we really kind of got a very strong conceptual basis for the show. So setting up the problem about this kind of precarity and this insecurity and the loneliness coming out of the pandemic, but also, like, we talked about the kind of neoliberal individuality and how do we kind of make a community around that. And then we really looked at, like, what is eroticism? You know, what does that actually mean for us? And we came up with a definition that was essentially like the creative energy, you know, the thing that animates you, the thing that kind of makes you feel alive. So that could be love, it could be sex, but it could be your relationship to nature, feeling the sun on your body, it can be anything. And so once we had that kind of conceptual framework, we reached out to artists. I would say the most of them we invited proactively. A couple of people reached out to us. But in Oscar's case, actually, I had seen his work in Amsterdam before I lived here. I don't know, 5 years ago, maybe, and just been following his work ever since. And then we were like, okay, we really want this guy in the show. And then it was just, you know, hey, we'd have a phone call, we'd show them some images and some kind of background material. And then in this case, luckily he said yes. but Oscar, maybe you can tell us more about the process.
Yeah.
I'd love to know, like, what you contributed to the entire event.
Right. So hi, I'm Oscar. I make very large scale kinetic sculptures. So I usually build very large things that move. And I think the piece you were referring to, you saw, was a wooden roller coaster that I built, I think, 6 or 7 roller coasters all over the world that are not for people, but are for artwork. So I usually tend to invite other artists to come and build something that goes on top and rolls around.
Whoa. That's so cool.
They're really fun to build and better than them. And it's really like gets people excited also to build things. So I kind of got invited to be part of the show to build something similar, like also build a roller coaster, make an erotic roller coaster. And I was like, I've already built so many of those. I wanted it to be completely different. So I pitched a proposal of making these 6-foot wieners, about a foot in diameter. So there's these really, really big hot dogs. and hot dogs are great because they have this weird bouncy quality to them. So they, you know, they're very flaccid, weird, you know, fleshy shapes. So I proposed a bunch of those, and some in buns and some without, just on these machines, just floppy wieners everywhere. and you know, the ambiguity of the word wiener is great. I like to have a fun with that. I like to have fun with sculpture and also with that, you know.
How do you make not how do you make a giant wiener, but how do you make a giant wiener floppy?
I've made them before. I've made a variation on this piece before. It's like the first time I made a giant wiener sculpture was when I was also doing a somewhat erotic art piece, and I always figured, wouldn't it be funny if you, like, you know, this idea of when you open up a can of hot dogs and you let them flop out, it's kind of like shoving your, like, a bunch of cocks through a glory hole, which is really awful and weird.
Jostling. Jostling is the word.
Yes. And it's hilarious at the same time. And everybody does this. I mean, I think, like, the hot dog is everyone's penis, because everybody's been, like, and make jokes about it, like bananas. So I made these. I made a sculpture with much smaller foam and latex hot dogs, which were about 3 foot long, maybe, and they were all just, you know, coming out of the wall and spinning around each other. So I figured I want to do this, but I want to make it a lot bigger, and, you know, bigger is better sometimes.
I want to add one dimension of the artwork he forgot, which is that one of them was a big hot dog in a bun that you could sit on, and when you sat on it, it would begin to vibrate,
which is great,
and people love this.
Like, that's hilarious. I love that.
It was good. At the opening, I walk into the space where I'm showing, and I find these people just face down, or just, you know, with their butts up in the air, just laying on top of my hot dog for like, you know, minutes on end. It was great. It was really, really nice to look at, to see
you let people interact with like action, because a lot of times with art you're not allowed to touch it, so that's kind of cool. I would like to.
I think it's really important
to
like be so interactive to a certain degree, especially when you're making erotic art, or when you're part of an erotic art show, a lot of it's like very tactile.
I also love that your name is Oscar and you made giant wieners.
That is so ridiculous. I did not put that together, because in my head I'm singing the Oscar Mayer wiener song, but totally didn't make that connection.
We have to show images of the artworks, you know, at certain points, and of course we didn't have one because this was a commission, and so we used the Oscar Mayer wiener truck to like stand in for this
one. Which makes sense. Also, kind of in the mental.
Yeah, I think our works that you can touch and experience and play with was also a big part of the curatorial like criteria, is that things you could actually interact with and feel and activate all the senses.
I've got a bit of a question if this isn't really something that you can answer, it's totally fine. But I've never been to Amsterdam or the Netherlands rather, but what I've gathered over the years of being over here in Canada is that Europe in general, but most certainly like the Netherlands, have a different relationship to sexuality and like the human body, nudity, for example, than we do over here in like Canada or the US.
Like we have a hard time even joking about it in our like media and our entertainment.
I remember growing up, like if I ever, I mean, the, you know, catching a glimpse of a naked body was extraordinarily rare in media. You know, the closest thing as a kid that I could come to is like the Sears catalog and going through the bra section and being like, wow, look at that. Like, so risque. But you know, I've always had this sense that in the Netherlands, in Europe in general, it's a little bit more loose with like the you know, nudity, the human body, sexuality in general. I've never been over there, so I could be completely wrong on that, but the question that I have is like, what was the response of the folks that were showing up to the exhibit? What was the response from, you know, the city in general, like having a giant erotic art exhibit in the town? You know, was it a good response? Was there backlash? I can imagine, like, if this exhibit opened up in Halifax, there would be a lot of like boomers that would just be so disturbed.
We have at least one picketer. One person with a picket.
For sure, yeah.
I grew up here. I'm very much Dutch. I think it's like fairly similar. I grew up like pre-internet, so it'd still be hard to find lots of nudity growing up. But you know, I remember seeing it on television, and you know, there's a lot of like great Dutch novels that include a lot of like gratuitous sex in literature. But I don't know, as a kid, we, you know, go to the sauna and there's, so I don't know, I guess you're very, very comfortable with naked body. I always, mm-hmm. like, whenever I have friends come over from the States, sometimes I have to go to work, right? So I give them tickets to go to the sauna and they're completely freaked out that they have to be naked all day. And at the same right. time, they're really excited. It's like, oh, I get to experience that. And they, so they loosen up to it, which is really fun because it's like very normal to me. But I don't know, like for the show, I had a lot of friends just really getting a kick out of it. Like there mm-hmm. was not a lot of like, I don't think there was a lot of like backlash at all. Like people were just really generally just very excited. And some of the pictures you sent me when I wasn't there was, there's been really, really fantastic pictures of people like in full fetish gear just going through the exhibition.
Well, actually, I was really surprised to hear this one reviewer come out and say, oh, it was very wholesome. I was like, really? I think that's because, you know, it wasn't pornographic, you know, porn is showing sex in like a very one-dimensional, more commercial image of sex. And we were trying to show more intimacy, more connection, more depth there. And so I think if people actually engage with the artworks, you know, and heard the stories of these people, then they came away thinking that it wasn't dirty. You know, the criticism that we did receive, I think was just that we couldn't show all perspectives, right? So there's really like 8 billion perspectives on sex in the world. And so we came under criticism for not showing a Christian perspective as much or asexuality, but you know, there's just so many stories to tell. And with 45 artworks, you can only do so much. Mm. So it was actually, it felt like they wanted more, you know, they wanted us to be bigger. So I think that's actually kind of nice. But I will say that because we were in this very traditional venue, on the one hand, they did, they had like event rentals, and we used the industrial spaces in the back where they actually like melted the metal for the coins. And so sometimes they would have events and they would say like, oh, can you please like cover all the windows because we don't want our people to see your like freaky people, you know? Like, okay. And so there was a bit of like, oh, what you guys are doing back there is like real weird. And
weird, yeah. Naked, you know?
And so that was quite funny because at one point they hosted a wedding and they were like, yeah, really, like keep your freaky naked people away from us.
Keep those giant floppy wieners out of this wedding.
Yeah, so we got a bit of that.
Would have come over, probably stuck out of the wedding.
Exactly. Yeah, weddings are boring, but installations?
And next to a sex show was funny. Yeah. So yeah, I think, I mean, I'm American, so I also grew up with that kind of very conservative mentality around it. And I will say that personally, this living here has allowed me to engage with things on a much deeper level just because I have access to it. And I think, you know, no place is perfect, but the Netherlands does have a more open mentality, and it does have a more this kind of idea that you can do whatever you want as long as you're not infringing upon other people. So I've been able to open up much more myself. And I think, again, the show really gave permission to people to do that. So I saw it both with our staff, but also our attendees. And I think that's the key thing, is like, everyone wants to know that they're not weird, or everyone wants permission to just be themselves. And I think when you show like some really weird stuff, then people see, oh, okay, well maybe I'm not that weird, and I can kind of step out of my comfort zone a bit more. So in a way, the exhibition was just like one big permission structure, for people to explore.
I love that. I love that. That's so funny.
Compared to what?
That piece about receiving criticism about, you know, missing out on certain perspectives. In the planning process of this exhibit, what was that discussion like between you and the other organizers about, you know, checking off certain boxes that really highlight certain perspectives of sexuality from around the world?
Well, I will say one of the things that we did is we both wrote positionality statements, which basically just say like, this is who we are, where we're coming from, and like, these are our blind spots and we're aware of that. And we welcome a dialogue about that. So we wanted to be really, really clear because we do have a certain perspective we're going into this with. And then we were also really cautious of not just like having a list of boxes to check, because we also wanted to show like really great world-class artworks, you know, and we often, it's really important to us that we give the artist creative freedom. So with Oscar, you know, we knew his previous work, but when he said he wanted to make hot dogs, we're like, great, you do that if that's what you're excited about, you know? So sometimes that took us in very, very different directions that we never could have expected. But I think for us as organizers, that's also the joy. And it's also an honor for us to give artists a platform to make something weird and new that is different. So you can't be too prescriptive about all the different things like that. And it's funny because I'm personally very interested in kink and how kink can be like healing perspective. And then people said, oh, well, it wasn't kinky enough. But I was really aware of like not putting my own agenda in it too much, you know? And I think at the end of the day, you can't make everybody happy. So what we tried to do was just show like balanced perspectives. You know, we had conversations about masculinity and how, you know, the world is changing and that can leave men behind sometimes and how they deal with that. But then we also had, you know, very queer perspectives, and we even had ecosexuality perspectives where this one woman was essentially like rubbing her vulva all over a prickly pear cactus. And, you know, that's like, that's cool too, you know? So we really tried to have as many voices as we could. And I want to say one other thing is that one of the artworks that was a really like a fan favorite was by Company New Heroes. And it was basically this large inflatable where you could go inside and read or hear people's erotic fantasies. So they collected something like 3,000 erotic fantasies from all over the country and then categorized them in about like 57 different categories. And so through this one artwork, it opened up to like tons and tons of stories that were like boring and funny and scary and creepy and uncomfortable and hilarious. So
We could all sit inside this giant inflatable on these cushions and pillows and take out like the, you know, like a menu of like, what would I want to read? And they were great stories, like wild ones, you know, like, wow, I never imagined that before. So it was, I had a really good time in there.
Yeah.
Also, you know, sharing these stories, like, oh, you got to check this one out. And it was, yeah, it was really good.
What about the like the sexual health aspect of things? What were some of the things that you were really hoping to cover and like, ensure that there was discussion and dialogue surrounding sexual health?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. So one of the things we always do with our exhibitions is try to make community partners. And so in this case, we work with the GGD. Oscar is like, GGD.
But it's like the CDC.
It's like the public health organization, essentially.
Right.
And so they actually came and did... They had like office hours at the exhibition. So they had nurses and like public health officials there to answer questions about STIs or reproduction or whatever else people wanted to talk about. So that was a really, really cool partnership. And yeah, we were really proud of that one.
They were really nice also.
Yeah, they were really nice.
They were really open.
It's hard for the public health organization to really get into the culture, you know, and really find opportunities to talk to people where they are. And so it really worked both ways.
Yeah. And yeah, to have a face for the public to respond to or to like, them to be public.
And I will say this isn't exactly health, but we also had some really difficult stories about trauma and overcoming really difficult things. So Martin and Inga Rebig did a series of film interviews where they asked people what's essential in their lives. And often sexuality is a part of that. And they basically told stories of like really difficult sexual trauma and how people overcame that. And so we also wanted to talk about resilience and healing and things like that in the exhibition. So health in a slightly different perspective. That was also important.
That sounds so well-rounded. I like the idea of those things being side by side, because just while you were talking, I was having this thought about there being like eroticism and sexuality and sensuality, and then there's like health, and which is like dysfunction often when people think about sexual health. They don't think about it unless there's a problem. So it's nice to see just like the slow bringing together of those two sides of the same coin that often we're just like, sex ed can be so dry and so like, you know, like wah-wah, like dysfunction-based and illness-based, pathology-based, to have it right there. You know, we're starting to see it with different speakers like Samantha Biddy over here, people who are just like showing up as their sort of kinky and erotic and like self-expressed selves, but they're teaching sex ed to, you know, university students and stuff like that over here.
Edutainment. I'm a big fan of edutainment.
Edutainment.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's the best. It's the absolute best. There's not enough of it. And,
this
is like, this is a great example of that.
Yeah. You know, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
I mean, there were the video pieces that I forget the artists, but that really, really dealt with in depth with like handicap and sexuality. And,
oh, yeah.
You.
Yeah. It's a group called the Army of Love. And essentially, they're creating these decentralized networks of people in kind of pods around the world, actually. Mm. And they teach people how to give love to those who are traditionally excluded from this kind of standard love economy or idea.
Right.
So it can be people with physical or mental handicaps or disabilities. It can be the elderly. It can be really kind of anyone. And that's a very beautiful project that shows you can be really proactive about this. But yeah, I think you're right. I think you have to make it fun for people, right? Like that's what this is all about. And you have to come where people are and kind of meet them on their level. So I totally agree about the edutainment.
Yeah. And that fun aspect is one of the things that I think personally is like, is vital when it comes to, you know, tackling things like stigma and tackling things that are taboo or tackling things that people maybe get uncomfortable about or have a history of, you know, preconceived notions about. Like it's one of
defenses come down a little bit.
Yeah, it's a really great bridge to get to the point that matters. You know, making it fun, making it engaging, making it being able to ride a giant wiener that is vibrating. You know,
I feel it was very, very. I feel very honored that I was part of the show, as I think being one of very few cis-heterosexual men in the show. And then making a piece like that, which is, it is fun. It is funny. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's very much about, you know, this male pressure to perform and have, you know, these floppy wieners and the, you know, impotence and the pressure to perform and psychological pressure about that. And you know, people make fun of penis or flaccid penises all the time. Or so it's like this, it's just this weird duality in there, which I think is, you know, also needs to be talked about. Also, like, you know, and plus sex is fun. Mm-hmm. It is funny, and it can be stupid, and it does, you know, so there's this weird there's those issues to it, and at the same time, yeah, you can make a joke about it, you know. It's sex doesn't always have to be serious, or rather not even. It's like a lot of it is release and enjoyment.
I'm curious for both of your perspectives on this as artists and organizers with an art piece or an installation or a festival. What makes it a success? What makes it successful? Whatever that means to you.
It's a really great question. I think for my project personally, it's always about like quality over quantity. So I would much rather have fewer people who are really engaging and staying there for hours and really getting into it than just a ton of visitors. So, you know, actually we caught a couple having sex in the elevator. And for me, I was like, oh my God, it's working. Like, I'm super happy. And so stories like that, where people are like, you know, another person told me, yeah, after I left the exhibition, I downloaded Tinder. And I was like, cool. Ooh, I mean, like, that's not the point, awesome. But like the fact that you were moved to take some action, then to me, that's a success story. Or I had another friend say, you know, I actually had like really great conversations with my friend about stuff we've never discussed for hours after the show. Mm. And so for me, that's really what it's all about. And then I would also say that I learned something, you know, like I personally learned a lot. And I think, as I mentioned before, like, you know, someone on the team really like broadened their open relationship and then learned a lot about power exchange and is now experimenting with that. And again, it's not the goal. I wouldn't have thought of that in advance, but like just the fact that these new perspectives led them to take action in their lives in a way that was fulfilling to them is really great.
Mm. Do you think that you'll do this again? Like, will this have a home again in the future?
I hope so. I hope you're going to reward this.
Oscar's like, I please.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this was a really like site specific and moment specific exhibition, but absolutely. I think this is really important. And what I found is that people really want to talk about sex. So I think there's going to be a lot more opportunities for that. I'm not sure exactly what form it will take yet, but 100% I'm going to keep working on this. I don't know about your answer about what is a successful artwork. Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I don't know. For me, it's as simple as just, you know, walking, like I said, walking into that space and seeing people laying face down on my giant white hot dog. I mean, that was like, okay, this, I, you know, that for me was like, okay, this piece worked, this is successful. Mm. And I've had like several people ask me like, hey, I want to have one of those vibrating hot dogs in my house.
How many batteries would it take to run that thing? Like, how many AA batteries? Perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
I think some listeners are going to be like, can we get some of this merch on the...
If Oscar made that battery operated, that would have been really funny.
Just hook it up to your generator.
I've never seen like a hot dog vibrator now that I think about it.
Yeah, yeah. There's a company in the States called Emojibator, and they do they make emoji vibrators. So you've got like the eggplant emoji vibrator, and you've got the like the chili. But a hot dog, I haven't yet. I've seen hammers. I've seen
small.
What I mean,
size doesn't matter. Size doesn't matter.
That's true. I was just laughing to myself too about your responses to like what made this successful, about how quirky it is that, like, you know, in lots of fields and lots of industries, when it comes to like picturing your success, is you've got these goals that are like SMART goals, they're specific and they're measurable and they're attainable. And it's like to have set the goals that you just set. Yeah.
I want someone to bang in the elevator.
Exactly.
I want someone to join Tinder.
Yeah. It's like, and what also caught me too, Morgan, is like, you wouldn't have known. And Oscar, you wouldn't have known that those particular successes were happening unless they were reported back to you, unless you walked in there and you saw that, like, you don't get those rewards if you're not talking to people and watching them interact with it.
I realize now that this is a really high bar for my next show.
Will there be a continued theme of eroticism for each of you in your work?
For me, yeah. I mean, it's something that, I mean, yes and no. There's always some of it in there, and I really enjoy it. But I like it also. I mean, this is very blatant, but I try to put it some subtlety in there. Yeah, I mean, there's always something that's very exciting about it, and then you know, that it excites people. Right now, I'm working on a piece which is kind of like a sacrificial altar kind of piece, and it's huge, and you know, in my mind I'm imagining it, you know, with the virgin sacrifice, of course, so like, you know, like from these like monster, or like what do you call it, like movies like Conan Barbarian, there's always like scantily clad women in it, and it's like they have this weird male gaze eroticism to it, and I kind of want to play with that in this sacrificial altar piece. So there's going to be a little bit of it in there, but I might just subvert it a little, because it's, you know, that's been done and it's not, you know, it's interesting, but you know, there's got to be something new to that.
I would say that what you've described is actually doesn't seem that much of a departure from roller coasters. Like, when you say it's exciting to people and it's got that like stimulating, exciting, playful effect on people.
For sure. And I think that's what, that's like one of the things that binds all of us together. I think this thrill seeking. It's, you know, it's why we like, it's why we enjoy eating hot peppers. Like, it's a plant saying, oh, stay away from me. And yet here we are,
yeah,
you know, cultivating these to be more and more spicy. And it's, Same thing with roller coasters. It's like we're strapping ourselves into a machine that, you know, gives us this illusion of, oh my God, I'm about to die. Mm-hmm. And I feel like art should have like a similar experience, where like a very physical, very, very, what do you call it? Like basic, visceral human reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like sex and eroticism is something that's in all of us. And that's why I find it interesting. And I think it should be in a lot more artwork.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm definitely going to kind of try to put it in there, but it's I'll see where it goes.
This is a little bit off topic, but Oscar, do you have inspirations of one day designing a roller coaster that you yourself can ride?
Sure.
Why not?
Why not? I mean, I'd love to. I mean, if there's one day space, or I happen to buy a house that has outside space, I would love to have something like that. But then again, I would also love to build more, say, variations on vibrating hot dogs, like more those kind of enjoyable sculptures.
Why stop at a roller coaster when you could build an entire amusement park?
I know. This has nothing to do with anything, but just talking to the two of you is making me so horny for like a haunted house experience, like like a really great haunted house. And it's wishful thinking, but a haunted house with an erotic kind of twist to it would just be would just be the best.
Great.
I mean,
haunted house.
It'd be so fun.
Yeah, basically it's a dungeon. Exactly.
Yeah, just a Hellraiser dungeon. That's it. Just a sex pleasure plane pains dungeon. Yeah.
Sign your consent before when you get in, and then
yeah.
Sign your waiver.
Yeah.
Morgan, what about you? What about your future endeavors and this?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, like I said, eroticism as like a creative energy will always be part of it, because it's like the thing that makes me excited to work on something, or like gives me energy, you know. So I think I want to bring this kind of erotic energy to everything that I do, even if it's not about sexuality necessarily. But yeah, no, I'm definitely going to continue in the topic. And again, you know, my interests are specifically around kink and the healing potential, because I think that so much shame is like limiting us as society. And I think if we can just kind of be honest about who we are and what we want and our desires, then that can really free us up in so many other areas. So I'm really interested in helping people to explore like what they really want and what's holding them back from that.
How can people stay up to date with the work that it is that you both individually do? If people are listening to this and they're like, man, I got to follow along.
Oh, I have a website, www.oscarpeters.com, or you can check me out on Instagram at Studio Oscar Peters.
And anybody listening to this, I highly suggest you head over to the Instagram. I've been sitting here kind of perusing at the entire conversation, and there's really like, you know, you can see there's a roller coaster in Kyoto that's going on. That's a really cool video. But there, if you scroll way down, you'll see some wiener action. Very, very fun wiener action going on there.
You need to put more on.
Yeah, we have a little recap film about the exhibition at come-alive.nl. That's C-O-M-E. Very intentional. My personal website is morgancatalina.com, but I'm terrible and I never finish it. So yeah, it's a big mess. Always on to the next project and never my own.
Well,
yeah, come alive.
Yeah. And you want to talk about that? You recently started up with Shari Klein, like the Pro Sex Society.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
We can plug the piss. So, a lot of people I knew are kind of working independently as sexuality professionals, especially in the creative sector. So I started a professional society for people working in this, and it's Professionals in Sexuality Society, with the unfortunate acronym PISS. But now we're breaking it. We really love it. So it's prosexsociety.com. We're probably going to have to see if PISS.com is available. I haven't checked that yet.
I guarantee you it's not. Yeah. at least not unless the price tag is very, very high.
Yeah, we could do like a Kickstarter for that, right? But yeah, it's basically about, you know, kind of supporting each other as professionals in this industry, because there is so much stigma against it and it can be really difficult. So it's hard for us to market services, even as simple as education on Instagram, on MailChimp, you know, like all of the major kind of American tech platforms are really censoring everything that we do. So yeah, we basically have a support group to help each other out and get the word out, because it's important and it's fun.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. I just looked it up. Piss.com is owned by Pornhub.com. So, so I'm sure it's cheap. I'm sure you asked them. They'll give that up for pennies.
And thank you so much for the opportunity, because it's really nice to just, share on platforms like this. And I'm just kind of curious. I have one question for you too, which is like, what does eroticism mean to you? And is there anything that you really hope to see changing or added in the world on this topic?
I mean, you know, at the very beginning, you were saying how eroticism can be healing, and I could not agree more. I think it's incredibly healing, or at least it has the ability to be incredibly healing. And, you know, again, especially coming from two people living on the eastern coast of Canada, which is a little bit more conservative than probably most places in Canada, I do hope for one day we start to see the conversation surrounding sex become a lot less troublesome for people and a lot less scary or a lot less taboo. You know, one thing that we've talked about a number of times over the course of the show is just how silly it is that sex workers face such hard times, and that sex work is sort of treated as it's treated as a crime. You know, it's just straight up a crime, which I think is absolutely atrocious. And so I hope that at least here in Canada someday we can kind of look at that as some bygone thought that was very silly, that we looked at sex work as some
lower form of occupation.
Yeah.
Like we have to keep in the shadows. We can't even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's me. That's my personal take.
It's a really good question for me, because I'm just going to Google what erotic means. Because I really, I'm a word person, and I just kind of wanted to see what the internet said. And so I'm looking at the Wikipedia article for eroticism, which says that it's a quality that causes sexual feelings as well as a philosophical contemplation concerning the aesthetics of sexual desire, sensuality, and romantic love. It's to me something that I definitely want more of a personal practice in, because I feel like, you know, we've been doing this podcast for six years almost, and sexuality and all of the things that come along with it. I feel like I've been really affected by the consumer capitalist sort of like view on it. So at times I'm like, I just don't even want to fucking talk about it anymore. Mm. Like, and it comes with like a lot of shoulds and like, you know, I do this podcast or I host this podcast and I have these conversations, so my sex life should be this, or I should know better. I should be able to define what I want, ask for what I want, like all of these like just shoulds. And I think that that's probably a deep, like implicit programming that I really need to undo. And if I need to undo it for myself, then I know we all need to. The turn I'm trying to take with my own personal growth is like, it's okay to do that for just myself, but I should be doing it for other people, including other people in it. It should not just be about me and my personal growth. I should be able to do this in a way that is like beneficial to other people. So just as a practice culturally in our, you know, city, and of just like pausing enough to like tap into our sensations and to give them real value. And I think a lot of that for me has to do with being in the natural world as well. As a long-winded, just like brain dump. I don't know if it made sense.
Yeah, it made a lot of sense.
Those are both great answers and really important.
Yeah.
Well, Morgan, Oscar, this has been a real treat. Like, just so enjoyable to sit down and talk to you both about the work that you've been doing, and excited about the work that you will continue to do. We'll definitely be keeping an eye out. And on behalf of myself, all of our listeners, Bridie, thank you. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to sit down and chat with us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's been
fun. Come visit us in Amsterdam.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. All right, there we have it, folks. Hope you enjoyed that conversation that we just had. And thanks for listening to the podcast. If you want to support the podcast further, you can do that by leaving a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, or you can simply rate the podcast on the Spotify mobile app. And if you want to support the podcast even further than that, which you can.
Wow. You can go to so kind and thoughtful and so generous.
So thoughtful. So generous. Go to patreon.com/turnmeon. To become a patron and help us keep this podcast afloat.
Well, if you want to reach out to us, turnmeonpodcast@gmail.com is always open for all of your messages. That's the best way to get in touch. If you have a question for us, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, if you have a recommendation for a guest on the show, or if you just want to send us a little love note, email, money transfer, all of that.
Sex toy.
You know, our email inbox is open to you.
That is it for this week. Until next week.
Why don't you go touch yourself?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.